I'm Chuck Sragi. Today's program is Social Justice on the Prairie, Local to Global. Our moderator is the Reverend Susan Phillips, the first woman and the 15th pastor to lead the historic First Presbyterian Church right here in Springfield.
I'm thrilled to have three members of the university's academic community join us today. Dr. Jan Draycamp is Emerita Professor of Liberal Studies, Women's Studies, and African American Studies. Dr. Tiffany Saunders is an Assistant Professor of African American Studies and Sociology Anthropology. Dr. Larry Golden is Emeritus Professor of Political Studies and Legal Studies. Larry, when UIS was founded as Sangamon State 50 years ago with its focus on public affairs, what is it about that original mission that made this place special or significant in our community?
What's important to understand is the historical context within which the campus was founded. We were coming out of the 1960s. That meant we were there during a period of incredibly important social justice ferment within our society, as well as really some major challenges in higher education. That's really important when we start talking about the university and how it was different. It was designated, as you indicated, as the public affairs campus of the state of Illinois. And that designation has, as far as I know, remained, even though it's become slightly lessened as we merged into the University of Illinois system. It infused almost everything we did. It infused our curriculum, which was very innovative. We actually stood out as one of the major innovative campuses in higher education for a number of years, having to do with when we came, we had no structure at all. We formed a curriculum that had around its core four interdisciplinary programs, social justice issues. Our faculty that came here were coming out of the ferment of the 60s, were in general activists in that regard. A good part of the early history, and I think to some degree it remained for quite a while, was really kind of defining and fleshing out what public affairs meant and how it impacted. So it was critical to both the designation of the university, it was critical to our role as an innovative higher education institution, and it was critical to the way in which faculty then approached their work within the university.
Jan, how has the focus on social justice shaped the educational opportunities and the community involvement for both faculty and students?
One of the reasons I came here, because I was an activist with international experience, and I was attracted to the notion of experiential learning. We had all of our students required to do an applied study term, which meant that most of our students were out in the community working with community agencies, which gave students a real hands-on experience working with the Rape Crisis Center, the Planned Parenthood, the Domestic Violence Center, the Crisis Nursery, the Environmental Lincoln Memorial Gardens. I was attracted to the fact that the students were asked to be out there into the community and actually have an impact and learn. And the faculty, I was hired to be a social justice person. Most of the faculty that were hired during that period were hired, so we would bring our experience to the students and ultimately the community. I mean, for me to be promoted, I really had to be out in the community, which had its benefits for the students that I taught in the classroom. Obviously, I was having real life experiences in their communities. And then they would bring back their life experience, their experience in the community. So it was a real marriage between the agencies in Springfield, the students in Springfield, and the faculty. So I love the fact that we provided services also. We had a STEM program for young women, which now is very fashionable, but we had one in the 80s. We had a reading, writing, and radio program where the students' literacy, poetry, writing was emphasized, and then we started doing a lot of international programs. The partnership between all of the agencies, the students, and the faculty, I think, was a rich time in our history where we learned from each other.
It sounds like it was a vibrant space where there was a synergy between the community, the faculty, the students that created a really special place here.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So Dr. Saunders, you are currently on faculty, and so I want to step forward more into the current realities, and I'm really curious, given how dynamic movements are in our country right now and in our community, I'm wondering where you see social justice getting traction and inspiration right now at UIS.
We're fortunate at UIS to have a fairly significant proportion of our students coming from the Chicago area. I think a lot of the inspiration, other than the local inspiration, right? So I don't want to take away from local residents who are inspired and moved to action. But when we're talking about the campus specifically, we have an energetic group of young people, many of them from the Chicago area, especially if we're talking about some of our diverse students, because we're recruiting fairly heavily there. And so I think they're bringing some of that energy with them, some of the things that are happening in their own communities, travel with them to Springfield. As we know, Chicago had some of the sort of more egregious incidents with interactions with police and, you know, Black lives in particular and some Black men. Students are bringing those experiences, that energy, but also that desire to make the world a better place, a more just place, a more equal place, a more inclusive place. They're bringing those experiences, that desire here. And it's great as a professor because it reminds us daily why we're doing the work that we're doing. And it requires us to rise to their level of spirit and engagement. If you really want to reach the students here at UIS, that you should be in tune a bit to issues of social justice, things that are happening in the larger world, because they are very in tune. You miss an opportunity to connect with them if you don't acknowledge and recognize that they're bringing that energy, that knowledge, that experience, and that desire with them. That I think it's making me a better professor, a better person. It's not allowing me to rest on previous work in social justice. It's requiring me to stay engaged and active in order to both encourage them but also to support them. And it's a two-way street. I'm getting the same encouragement and support from our students as well.
I'm really intrigued at both the history and the current realities of the way in which this university challenges and invites students, faculty, and the community to reach out and go deeper. I want to ask the three of you to go deep and to reach out in some different ways. Larry Golden, what lessons from Sangamon State and UIS history do you think that we should be valuing, treasuring, highlighting right now?
I've always looked at our experience here as analogous to the growth of a person. You have your early years with a lot of energy and turmoil. You get into kind of middle years where you start to, rules start to become more important and rigidification, and then the later years, which become a challenge. Which way do you go now with what you have experienced? There has fortunately been some windows of opportunity that have remained having to do with the public affairs emphasis of the university. I mean, I guess I'm maybe a good example of that. The Illinois Innocence Project is housed here at the university. It is the only undergraduate university-based innocence organization in the country. We've already helped 17 individuals who were wrongfully convicted get out of prison with maybe 3,000 years total of incarceration. That opportunity would not, I believe, have happened at other places. Part of it has to do with how faculty who are coming in view their role in terms of the opportunity for what they want to happen. Clearly, there have been some significant alterations so that it's more difficult today to see those opportunities than it was when we came here, when the opportunities were everywhere. I helped form and taught in a major called Justice and the Social Order. We actually have people walking around in the United States who have the major in justice and the social order from Sangamon State University. We do have some innovative directions still that have remained within our offerings. Clearly, I believe it should be a lot more. I see, as Tiffany has pointed out, because I'm not as close right now to all that's going on within the university campus itself, I can begin to see some of the germs of that still taking hold. And faculty like Tiffany and others who are coming in, the question is going to be whether the university, whether the campus will reward its faculty in particular for doing other than just holding up in an office and doing research and publication, which is the model of the larger University of Illinois and major universities. So to the degree that faculty will receive encouragement and reward, the opportunities are there, and I think being in the state capitol, which didn't get mentioned by me particularly, because that was one of the reasons why this campus was so important, was as a public affairs campus, was being in a state capitol and emphasizing public policy.
Jan, I'm interested to hear from you. What commitments by UIS now do you think would strengthen the community?
I know the interim chancellor came out with one of her goals is to address racism on campus, and the city of Springfield is still grappling with race issues. There's several organizations that are constantly trying to facilitate dialogue, and churches and community organizations. And I think, honestly, if that's carried through on campus, it can't help but, again, form a partnership between the campus and what's going on in the community. So the university might be able to provide resources, or the community might be able to provide resources to the campus. I know another initiative on campus is the Strong Environmental Studies programs that are addressing having students get real-life experience addressing climate change. That could be strengthened, and I think we could, again, have an impact on the city of Springfield. I still love the experiential learning. I think universities should still get students out into the community, into the state capitol, overseas, studying health in the Gambia. I took students to Jamaica and we studied the social problems there. I think we can still find ways of getting our students out, and that strengthens the community. We used to have community members actually go on some of these international trips to Japan especially, but other places. Experiential learning, environmental studies, addressing race issues. I think we could still continue to work on those and be a better partner with the community.
Tiffany, I want to ask you to look forward, and I wonder what visions or values could empower students toward a more equitable, sustainable, and just future?
They already have some of that vision. The work that Jan mentioned on anti-racism, we can certainly talk about as one of the things that's important. But really what I think is most important for students is to find whatever feeds their soul. To really, I know that sounds really cliche, but you have to find the things that inspire you, because those are the things that'll keep you going when the work gets tough. I've been involved in anti-racism work for a long time, and the work gets really tough, right? And it feels like you're taking a million steps forward, and then steps feel like, and then it feels like you're taking 2 million steps back, right? And so then you're in a deficit. Finding what feeds your soul, having some conviction and resilience as well to get through sort of the ups and downs and ebbs and flow of that type of work. As I said before, I really do think that the students have a lot of that already. It's really just our obligation to support them, to keep them motivated, to tell our stories. I mean, I didn't know that history of Sangamon State / UIS until we were preparing this panel. So I mean, what one of the things that we could probably do in helping students is just to reaffirm that that's who we are as a university. To reaffirm that what they're interested in doing and the things that inspire them are already a part of our fabric as a university, our identity as a university, and just really using the students to help us find that identity again and to take root in that identity. It could be really, really useful as well.
It's critical that we have a sense of who we are that distinguishes us from the rest of higher education, particularly in Illinois. We run the risk of losing that if what we want to do is just become another campus that delivers education in the same way everybody else does. I have been particularly arguing that the raison d'etre for this campus is, in fact, its public affairs mission. That's how it started. How we want to define that may be something that we want to, again, come back and talk more about. We need to be able to draw students here for more than having athletic teams and even a student union and things like that. We need to be able to draw students here because they see something they can get here that they would not get somewhere else. Part of that is clearly the teaching. The opportunity here has always been to have close relationships with students and, in fact, to reinforce that bond wherever possible, to have students talking about being able to link. I mean, the irony for me is I'm teaching a class right now where I actually have the son of a student who I taught back in the 1970s who is working with me closely in the Innocence Project. And part of the reason he came here was because his father told him about what the possibilities were here. So I think it's really critical. And I want to just add one other thing. Jan's comment about the chancellor's priorities. The chancellor, acting chancellor, put down as her top priority outside of COVID, anti-racism and social justice. I think that's important, not just for the time we're in, but it exemplifies the kind of leadership that we'll need as we go forward in the future. If we were to have just a manager, because of our fiscal price problems, for example, who focused on that and didn't provide the kind of encouragement and leadership in terms of the priorities, we would see a very different kind of a campus. So the opportunity is there. I compliment Chancellor Whitney for what she's doing in terms of her leadership and as an example for what we can do in the future.
Jan? I'm imagining that several people who are listening to this, I know, are alums. They experience the intersessions where we talked about gender, or they experience some of the amazing speakers we used to have on campus. Larry mentioned Shirley Chisholm. The idea of, I think, coming together as a university and have a plan. Like, what is our vision and what are we going to look like is a way to proceed, to take the history, to take the future and say, who do we want to be? I think Larry's absolutely right. What is our vision?
Rebecca says that she graduated from SSU in 1975 with a major in with justice and social order, and that ceased to be a major after 1976. Dr. Golden, could you talk about that, how things evolved and what happened with that program?
Well, I think it goes back to my comments that I made when we opened about the analogy between the growth of a person into different stages of life. Innovation in higher education was extremely important when we opened in 1970. We were actually one of about five or six what was called senior universities in the country. We only had juniors, seniors, and some master's graduates. And our programs were highly innovative, to some degree experimental. We had written evaluations instead of grades for many of our students, but we also didn't have traditional majors. What my view of what happened was that as we got more and more faculty who came in and they were not socialized the same way that the faculty who came in that first year or two were socialized. What they had to fall back on was their graduate educations and their backgrounds. If somebody came in and their background was history or political science, that's where they wanted to put their emphasis. That's what they'd been socialized to do in graduate school and to write articles. As we evolved in the mid-1970s, those university programs got de-emphasized and eventually all of them evolved out. And I think largely because faculty, number one, faculty were more comfortable falling back on that which they knew, which were their disciplinary programs, and also partly because that period of experimentation in higher education, innovation, which I'm glad to see occasionally now is popping up in, again, in our university language, started to constrict. And part of that was budgetary around the country. Part of that had to do with the university enrollments. I mean, we were projected to be 10,000 students by 1980. We're around 5,000 now. That wasn't our doing. It wasn't a failure on our part. It had to do with the demographics and the budgets throughout the country. But what happened was faculty fell back on their disciplinary backgrounds more and more. Students also came in, more traditional students were coming in, more younger students were coming in, and they were actually, what is this justice and the social order major? What is this environments and people major? I never heard of that before. I wanted to go into biology. I wanted to go into, it changed. We've kept some of the innovation under the surface, and I don't mean that in a subversive way, although that would have been not so bad, but it just, you know, it just sort of infused what we were doing. Still has been able to be there, but that's the reason why. It also, by the way, justice in the social order got also a little bit de-emphasized because of the beginning and evolution of the legal studies department, which in itself at that time was very innovative in the way it was put together as well. And since there was this perceived relationship between justice and social order and law, that was one of the other reasons.
I'm curious to follow that up with a question about how some of the innovative things are happening now. Because what I'm hearing in terms of your descriptions of what was innovative in the beginning is similar to what I think may be innovative now. And what I'm hearing come through is that the innovation is coming in some ways that are interdisciplinary. So for instance, I think, if I've understood correctly, Tiffany, that the Hip Hop Express is a combination of STEM learning, cultural studies, and also community building efforts. So it very much is this interdisciplinary effort that crosses all sorts of boundaries. Am I hearing that correctly? And
that's definitely true of the Hip Hop Express. And again, that was a grant funded project through President Colleen put out a call for arts and humanities grants. And the specific goal of those grants was to engage the community, was to basically demonstrate that, for instance, the arts and humanities were still an important part of society and an important part of culture, but could also be really useful for engaging the community in specific ways. And I should also mention, it was supposed to connect the campuses as well. The way I like to think about this is that it's a community education tool, a community building tool. It's using hip hop music that's widely consumed by youth. So, right, you meet them where they are, and then you can get them interested in topics and subjects that they may not otherwise be interested in. Or if we're talking about science and math in particular, some students think that they don't like those subjects pretty early on. Part of what this bus is meant to do as well is engage younger youth specifically and show that science and technology, engineering and math can be fun, and that what you might perceive as a deficit may come from only understanding those subjects through one lens or in one way. And so if we can use the medium of hip hop, that's the goal, to expand their understanding of those disciplines, we could potentially simultaneously do a both societal good, but also a global good, since this is local to global, right? We all know the statistics about people of color in particular in those disciplines, pursuing those sorts of careers. And so the Hip Hop Express, again, is using music that they're consuming and showing them how these skills that they may feel that they're lacking in are actually useful even in sort of that medium. It's still a work in progress, so it came to Springfield this fall, and that specific aspect of the Express wasn't part of that trip. This particular trip was more about community education, like what is this thing, right? So before you get buy-in, you have to show the community what it's all about. So that's what that first trip was. And the other thing that it sort of afforded me personally is this sort of network of scholars interested in these things. It's really created a tangible connection between UIS and, for instance, UIUC, which is where my other colleagues are that are working on this project. I think there's some real opportunity for like cross-campus collaboration, cross-campus innovation, using these sorts of tools to sort of think outside the box. I also love that it's a school bus, because school buses, as many of us know, were used for integration, were used to integrate communities historically. So I love this notion. For kids, it's just a familiar object, right? They're just familiar with school buses. But because it's meant to be an educational tool as well, we can talk about the role of school buses in integrating communities. I love that it's fulfilling sort of multiple needs. So while we say it's STEM, it's also teaching history, right? It's teaching art and music. Obviously, I'm very passionate about this project because I just think there's a lot of potential to reach a lot of people in different ways.
I find it exciting because I think it builds on the inherent connections between disciplines. I mean, like, we have created the boundaries between
Correct.
Disciplines. They aren't necessarily there. For instance, we know that kids who are engaged in music do better in math.
Correct.
Helping kids use something that they love, like music, to do better in math.
Exactly.
I just see that building every student up.
Exactly.
A person writes, as a student at Sangamon State University, we were required to take courses in public affairs curriculum to help expand our outlook. Are these kinds of courses still required?
I don't know that students are required to take curriculum specifically in public affairs, but if we're talking about classes and curriculum that's designed to expand their outlook, I think that that has remained as part of the university. I would argue that it's remained largely through our ECHE program. So that's Engage Citizen Common Experience. ECHE requires students to take like a global learning class or global awareness class, that's what it's called, or a class that focuses on U.S. communities with specific attention to issues of like race, class, gender, those socio-demographic sort of differences. It also has an option for sort of experiential learning. And I wouldn't say that it's rooted specifically in public affairs, but I would say the spirit of that still exists at the university via ECHE.
We've had great speakers continue to visit UIS. For instance, Representative John Lewis was here in 2015 as part of the ECHE speaker series. But this person says they don't always see a broader mix of the community. I think they're referencing members. It's possible that members of the community who aren't connected to UIS are missing opportunities here on campus. Are there ways to improve community interaction?
Inherent in that question is a continuing critical challenge for the campus. And I think it's partially being confronted, if you will, by the whole question of whether or not to put part of our campus in downtown Springfield. The irony is that as active as this campus was supposed to be, we have not, I believe, done a good job of linking the campus with the larger community. It's been very selective in terms of faculty and others being involved with the community. That was something that was envisioned very early as being important. I think that relationship needs a lot of work, and I think the kind of program that was mentioned having to do with John Lewis, which I believe came out of actually the Common Read program, which was not just university, which in itself says something. But again, I don't think faculty are rewarded for engaging in community service. When we were, again, in the earlier years, community service, not just university, because everybody was already building a university, community service was something that actually was part of the reward system. One of the things that we need to be working on, and I think, you know, Tiffany is representing one way how that can occur, is encouraging faculty to take what they're doing into the community as a matter of their job here at the university. The traditional higher education is a very solitary enterprise for faculty. They sit, they do research, they write, and even teach. All of that is self-contained. And you have to encourage people to go beyond that. And one of the things we did when we started is we said, you are a teacher of biology. What does that mean when we talk about public affairs? Well, we all know now, biology, bringing it into the community, the kinds of policy discussions that are going on. You can go on and on because a lot of people will say, well, this is what I do. It has no relationship to the community. And in fact, it does. Discussion about downtown hopefully is going to move forward. When we came here early on, remember what I said about the founding of the campus in the 1960s. Look at where we are geographically. Why are we here? Why were we put out in a cornfield? Because Springfield did not develop. Well, one of the reasons that had been suggested was this was in the middle of the ferment by students all over the country. And we were near a facility where the National Guard could mobilize easily and they could contain the campus because of where we were located. I don't know, I never saw evidence that that was actually the case, but it was talked about. And the fact of the matter was that that separation actually has had a much greater impact than I thought it would over the years because, you know, this is not a very huge city or anything, and you'd think that we would be more integrated into the community.
Larry, what I think I'm hearing you describe is a tension between sort of a traditional model of higher education with the ivory tower,
yes,
with all of the implications of both ivory and tower as part of that, and something about the roots and origin and DNA of Sangamon State being a place that was intended to serve the greater good, to focus on public affairs, to focus on social justice, which requires integration, communication, exchange, engagement. As someone who's new to this community, I can tell you that one of the things that I find fascinating is the lack of communication back and forth between all sorts of organizations and people. I find out about really exciting things happening in Springfield 2 days after they happen. And I feel like I'm pretty connected to a lot of different people and places. So I'm wondering, even this kind of program that we're doing in this webinar, if this is the kind of thing that might help us cross some of those boundaries and do a better job of sharing information and cross-fertilization? Do any of you want to speak to that?
I mean, so I'm thinking of a couple of things. I keep saying this, you have to meet the people where they are. And so I'm a part of a couple of groups on Facebook that do a really good job of showing, of sharing events. So like that's maybe, I mean, we don't often, or we do think about social media, but maybe that's one thing that could be leveraged a bit more. And so it's not just sharing it from the UIS social media page, but it's getting UIS connected to these other pages that exist that are specifically for Springfield residents for the dissemination of information. The other thing that I was thinking about as Larry was speaking, and then also just related to this question is, you know, we're a public university. I always like to remind us of that. And I've said this when we were preparing for this, you know, that to me means we have an obligation to the public. And we, I think, have to figure out what that means. And some of it is about going out into the public, but some of it is about is figuring out how we make this campus welcoming for the public as well, right? So I think what's really happening is the campus feels closed off because we haven't figured out a way to let the public know that they're allowed on campus. And I am fully aware that, you know, now we're in COVID, so we have to take that into consideration. But even before that, we have to take into consideration the safety and security of students with school shooting, you know, campus shootings and things like that happening. So I'm fully aware this is a delicate balance. But I think even before those things rose to the level that they have now, we weren't doing a good job of saying this space is open for you. This space is, I don't want to call it the people's space, but it kind of is, like your tax dollars are helping to fund this. It's sort of talking about the governor's mansion as the people's house. You know, this campus in the state capitol is, could maybe be likened to the people's campus, right? This idea that we just have to figure out a way to not just get people in for these big events, but to get people just walking around the quad and walking around the colonnade and understanding and seeing how beautiful this campus is, getting a chance to, you know, more informal interaction. So it's not limited to John Lewis coming or Etche Speaker Series bringing some big speaker or whatever. I'll stop there because I'll be rambling, and I see that Jan wants to say something as well.
No, what I wanted to say, we had a very vibrant Department of Continuing Ed. Mm. When I came here, we brought groups and we did workshops. We did, people could come for $10 and go and attend a class. So you'd have people from the community who would be on campus and they paid their senior fee and they'd be in your classes. So the notion of exactly what you're talking about, Tiffany, is a really good one. That talk about an opportunity that we just let go of. This is everybody I knew for a long period of time would come on campus and eat in the cafeteria and come to take a workshop and come to get certified. I used to teach cosmetology students, I mean cosmetologists, who came to campus to learn about interpersonal relations and communication. So we'd have hundreds of hairstylists come on campus for a couple of days to do their workshops, and it would be faculty who would be teaching them. That sort of thing. We had a very vibrant, as I said, continuing ed and reduced fees for people to come and take classes. And so I think we could go a lot further. And when I taught downtown on two different occasions, we had little satellites and we would bring in people downtown for a little workshop. So I think it's just, what is the will of the campus? What is the vision? What is, if we're gonna grow, I think there was a question there about are we gonna grow? Are we gonna get bigger? And honestly, I think we could. But I think identity is just really important. Like, why do people want to come here? And you've got to hire faculty who have their mission is to be instrumental in the community. And the community, I think, has gotten out of the habit of maybe calling on the university. You know, there would be lots of resources here, but maybe the community doesn't have that habit. I remember, you know, the Rape Crisis Center called the women's studies and said, we need help, we need workshops, can you come and help us do something? And I think maybe we've gotten out of the habit of having that linkage.
Thank you.
I'll make this quick. There's one other aspect to this that I think is a little bit more difficult for us to deal with, and it's a way of life in Springfield. When I'm working with groups and they say, where can we meet? And I say, well, I can get us a room at the university. Oh, we don't want to travel out that far. There's a real issue of attitude or convenience or way of life in this community that has actually inhibited people from coming here. Not our fault, not always our fault. So I do think that that's another thing that speaks to the value of us having some kind of campus presence, maybe downtown, you know, where it would be viewed as more convenient, as much as I don't like that, because I think that people got to get out of that habit that you can go anywhere in 10 or 15 minutes in this community, but if you have to go to the 15, you don't want to go if you can do it in 3. And so there's a real issue there. But I mean, maybe you, Susan, can talk a little bit about the inhibitions, because when we talked about your coming out to the university, it was like, oh, where do I go? How do I find it? You've been here a year and, you know, well, 3 years. See, that goes to show, you know, what is it that has caused you to see, to experience that separation?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can address that question. I have been on campus. I've been here for concerts. One of my kids played soccer on the fields here. I have been to a demonstration around Earth Day here on campus. But mostly, I just don't know what you're doing. I'm not on a mailing list. I don't see ads in my social media feeds. Thanks for inviting me today. I'm glad to be here today. And I'm thinking about being downtown in spaces, and I happen to pastor a congregation that has a large building that we are using pre-pandemic. We were using more and more with community groups who needed rehearsal space or gathering space or performance spaces. And for us, that was reconnecting with our roots as a congregation that was very dedicated to community engagement. And that, for us, has been really important because it's our congregation relearning our history. And the phrase that we've used is that we are both rooted in our traditions and the things about our history that we treasure, but also reaching into new spaces as an open and affirming congregation where LGBT folks are in our membership and on our staff and in our leadership, our commitments to anti-racism work in the community. And I see that happening in lots of other places, and I'm definitely hearing it here. And so I'm intrigued by the parallels that we are reaching back into our history to learn who we have been as a way of shaping where we hope to go in the future. I know that there are a couple more questions here, and I want to get to our audience questions. One question is, do any of you have thoughts on Innovate Springfield and its potential impact on social justice and anti-racism?
So there's obviously a potential impact. Mm-hmm. but I really think, and this is not necessarily a criticism, though maybe it is, it's more of an observation that it's been pitched as sort of business focused, which doesn't preclude it from being focused on anti-racism and social justice. It just hasn't been pitched in that way. And so I will say that I have not found a space for the types of work that I like to do in Innovate Springfield as it's been pitched so far. I think that there's definitely room for growth in that area, but I think, again, it'll take this university, but all universities have this problem, and figuring out the extent to which we need to operate as a business versus operating outside the realm of business, whatever that means, right? So if we start counting a bunch of dollars and cents and things like that, which of course we need to be sustainable, so I know those things are important, but if all of that, if we're paying so much attention to that and that is driving a lot of our decision making, we will miss opportunities to engage in ways that don't produce the same types of profit, right? So there's different types of benefit, there's different types of profits for a community, and money is only one of them, right? we can also benefit or profit a community through changing the community as well. And sometimes, at least my perception so far, and this could be completely off, but I did go to a lot of those early Innovate Springfield meetings, and it seemed pretty sort of business focused. I mean, that's just been my take. And again, I'm not saying that's the same. I'm not saying that these two things are polar opposite. I'm just saying I haven't seen where anti-racism and social justice has been integrated into that type of work so far.
What I'm hearing in your response is sort of the notion that we can do well by doing good.
Yeah.
That I mean, we own a small business. That owning a business does not preclude those commitments to developing the community relationships in a way where everyone is doing better.
Yeah.
It's really a question of how we invest ourselves and what sort of vision we want for the community in which we live.
Yeah.
Am I hearing you?
Yeah, that's great.
We are coming up on the hour. So we're out of time for other questions. I do want to ask you all to be succinct, if I may. Can you, in just a sentence or two, share with us where your confidence is in the future of UIS and its purpose and success?
Well, I'll go ahead. Everybody's taking long sighs up here on the panel. So I am confident because we have faculty like Tiffany, we have energetic, demanding students. I think our students have expectations of our university or any university, any learning atmosphere. I think we will always be informed by who we hire and what students we welcome on campus. And I am confident that there's enough energy there to propel us ahead.
Larry or Jan?
That was Jan.
Well, it's the word confident that is, of course, the big challenge in that question. Let me just say that I continue to see extraordinary students coming through the Illinois Innocence Project, opportunities for students to work with us in that project. There is good as any students I've ever had, although they're a lot younger than when we started. They're going on with great things in their lives. So that's certainly the case. I think it's, for me, it's more aspirational than confident that, again, if we take advantage of the mandate for us to be a public affairs campus that distinguishes us from other campuses, that we have great opportunity to move ahead. Let me just, at the risk of going on another couple of sentences, caution my own thoughts about this. We are entering a period of extraordinary challenge in higher education right now, coming out of the COVID experience. And I'm worried about the future of higher education in our country across the board. Forget just our campus. It's going to be potentially a real struggle for us to put the pieces of higher education as we've known it back together again. The financing is going to be very tricky. And our society, the people who are out there watching and participating in this, are going to have to make real determination to support funding for higher education in this country, because we're in a crisis right now that I don't think people understand yet.
Thanks for highlighting that. Tiffany, will you bring us home?
So, I guess I was having trouble with the word confident too, but what I think we can, and because I was thinking about this as well, We're coming out of challenging times. It's going to be imperative that we demonstrate our value and our worth beyond sort of the ivory tower. And so I think all of this discussion about connecting back to the community, about being of service to the community, will be really important for thinking, for developing a sustainable model for not only our university, but especially our university being situated in the state capital, but I think all universities going forward, right? So I think we have to demonstrate that we're not just a bunch of people sitting around talking about ideas, but that we're also a bunch of people doing something. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think the world today demands of us. And so I think that's where our future lies.
Dr. Saunders, you have talked about the obligation and opportunity of being at this university in this city at this time. And I want to thank the three of you for taking on the obligation and using this as an opportunity to educate the rest of us. Thank you all for participating in this conversation.